So this morning, Jason's going to set up. We're going to walk down 10 years of memory lane that has somehow turned into kind of a roast of Harmon, Waylon, and myself. So buckle up.
Awesome. So just full disclaimer, I think it became that because of the photos you picked, which I did not choose. So I'm not fully responsible for the way this has kind of turned a little bit. Okay, really quick question. Since we're kind of looking at our childhood, can you think of something you built or created as a child that you were really proud of? It could have been an art project. It could have been anything. So take a minute, think about that. What comes to mind? Just shout it out.
A blue jay trap.
A blue jay trap? Nice. Did you catch any blue jays?
My brother ruined it and I cried.
Oh.
A fireplace in a cardboard box under our apartment.
A fireplace built out of a cardboard box underneath wooden stairs in an apartment. How'd it go? Okay, but you were pretty proud of that, right? Yeah, yeah. What else? What else you got? A seatbelt for a bicycle. How did that work out? Probably good that it didn't work, or no? I think you want to be flung from your bike, but I could be. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. But you were kind of like, you were, this, like, when you thought of it, you were like, oh my gosh, this is a great idea. Such, these examples are so helpful to our conversation today, actually. So today we're, anybody else want to shout one out? Okay. Yeah. Oh, contraption where she didn't have to get up from her bed to turn off her bedroom light and not the clapper, I'm guessing. This is pre-clapper. Nice. Strings, rubber bands, thumbtacks. How many people know what the clapper was? Is okay. All right. There it is. Not as many people. I'm feeling a little older. Clapper is pretty awesome. Look it up. Okay. So we're celebrating our 10th birthday. We thought about maybe just ditching the homily and going and playing Pokemon Go. But we're not. Sorry. I'm going to interview Gideon, Waylon, and Harmon, invite them to share some of Vox's story. And it seemed good to actually try to give you a sense of what it feels like to try and start a new spiritual community, a new church. So I want to show a brief video clip. I've showed some video clips this summer that were kind of cute of our little dog. This is not that. This video clip also involves animals, but it might be mildly traumatic. Anybody familiar with the barnacle geese? So we're going to show the very first steps of a barnacle gosling. And it's, you just need to brace yourself. You might need to look away. Okay. But this is actually, and it may be what it feels like coming to church even. I don't know. So let's take a look and just kind of hang in there. Feel free to look away, cover your ears, but here we go. It's about 700 feet up in the air. The parents are below calling it.
The perfect launch.
Yeah, that's the perfect launch.
And a controlled drop. This is as good a descent as it's possible to make.
Okay, brace yourselves. This is kind of what it's like. Just keeps going. Just rolling down the cliff. It's about 700 feet. It's almost there. Kind of told him we could edit out a little bit
it's
of that part.
So there to meet it. A little dazed,
so that's kind of where we're kind of shaking our head like, whoa, we made it. That's how we feel today. So I just wanted to give you a sense. I know that's hard, but I want you to connect with the emotion of what it's like to start a new spiritual community. Yeah, I know it's intense. So we're going to talk about growth. We're going to talk about maturing slowly. And the way we've matured as a community is actually not unlike the way all of humans develop in some sense. So we thought it'd be fun to use a child development lens to kind of look at the infancy, the early childhood, preschool, school-age developments of Vox. And so we're going to use Eric Erickson's theory of human development. He was I think we have a photo. He was a German-born developmental psychologist known for his theory of psychosocial development. His parents were Jewish and Danish, and he was teased for both in different schools. So identity actually became the main focus of his work, which is kind of this next season we're going into. And he actually coined the frame identity crisis. So there's that. And just to briefly look, I'm not going to go into these in depth right now, but we're going to go through looking at infancy, where we work on trust, mistrust, early childhood, 1 to 3. And he didn't necessarily put ages on these developmental stages: autonomy and shame, preschool, 3 to 6, initiative, guilt, school age, 6 to 11, industry, wanting to do a bunch, accomplish, and then high school age, which is identity versus role confusion. And his sense was that when we move through our journey supported, we are able to kind of answer these questions really well. And when we don't, we kind of need to circle back and touch on those pieces of work. And our scripture today actually gives language to this kind of unfolding spiritual maturation. So I would invite you to read aloud together our words from 1 Corinthians 13 with the people sitting around you. So you could say that the writer of this piece of scripture, Paul, is describing a good childhood. So when he was a child, he was allowed to be a kid. He spoke like a child, he thought like a child, he reasoned like a child. When he became an adult, he was ready to transition from that supported childhood to the next phase of maturation. And most of us don't have a fully supported childhood. So even as adults, I think we actually find our child selves are driving our decisions, saying, hey, pay attention to me, which doesn't mean we're bad people. It just means we're being invited to care for our younger selves well so we can become love in the world. So we're going to kind of walk through our journey together this morning and want to start off just talking a little bit about Vox's childhood, where we talked, thought, and spoke a little bit younger. So this would be our infancy, where we're working on trust and mistrust. And in our early days, we were actually under the care of Austin Chinese Church. And Gid and Wei and Harmon, this was kind of around the time you guys first met. Gid, you want to start us off?
Sure. So I think Harmon chose some spectacular pictures of us. So this is what we look like. So I had just been early in the journey of discerning what I was supposed to do in the world. I graduated with a liberal arts degree in political science, which meant I was excellent at reading and very good at being unemployed. And then I went off to seminary in search of just meaning and truth. And then I got there, and it was kind of this siloed Christian culture place, and I was kind of frustrated. And people would ask me, do you want to be a pastor? I'm like, I don't know. I don't think so. 2 years into it, I was frustrated. I was bleeding money. I got invited to a church in Detroit to speak. I'd never spoken before. It was through a friend of a friend. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll give it a go. And then at the end of the weekend, they offered me a job and offered to pay for the rest of my seminary. And I just heard the last part. I'm like, I'm in. So I pastored this congregation. It was kind of on the edge of the suburbs in the city of Detroit. And I had this congregation of 14 students. And in those few weeks, there was this sense of, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what God put me on earth to do. And I haven't had a sense like that since. And there's many times where I was like, maybe I should just drive a truck or deliver something. So there was an invitation for the possibility to come to Austin. And so the possibility was to kind of pastor the youth and the college at this immigrant church with the possibility of starting the church. And a few things happened. And then so I actually handed off the ministry of Detroit to Kevin, who's right there, and then came here, started pastoring the youth, and then handed it off to Sam, who's one of the leaders, and then worked with the college students. And that's where I met Harmon. And then I had recently met Waylon, and he can tell this story.
It's a good story. I almost thought about doing this in terms of the photos of y'all's hair throughout time. You'll see.
But I'm not sure what we were celebrating there, but we knew how to celebrate.
I didn't pick them.
So the first time I met Gid, he came down to speak in Austin at a retreat. And at the time, Rachel and I, we were just acquaintances. And, you know, Rachel and Gid are siblings. And so I think one night, a whole bunch of us went to eat dinner, hang out, and got kind of late. And so I drove the two of them back home. And Rachel and I were staying in the same apartment complex at the time. And after I got back to my place, within like a minute, I get a phone call. And Rachel's like, she's on the phone, and she's like, so this might be kind of weird, but my brother's wondering if you want to come up and hang out with us. She's like, I know it's late. It's like midnight. You don't have to. My brother just wanted to call you and ask you to come hang out with us. So I was like, I'm not doing anything, so I'll go. And within a minute of me showing up, Gid gets up and he's like, I'm kind of tired. I'm going to sleep. And he leaves the room, which kind of worked out for us. So I'm not sure if you were looking out for your sister, or maybe you were unintentionally looking out for your sister.
I actually have no recollection of this. So I'm forming memories now, and I feel like I was there, but I think it's just from the stories they were telling. But I was a seven. I was like, this feels new. That guy seems new. Let's just invite him up here. I'm going to go to bed.
But thank you. Thank you. But after college, my background was in engineering, and I did some network consulting for about 6-7 years. I did a lot of traveling, and it was around the same time. So I was kind of processing vocation and just meaning of what I was doing at work. And, you know, Gideon was mentioning sort of this dream and this possibility of what it might look like to plant a church. And so it was all around that same time that we moved back to Austin. And that's kind of how I started part of this journey here.
And then Harmon.
I wanted to be known that photo of Waylon was right after his consulting. Oh, my God. You're very welcome, everyone. The photo of Waylon was right after he decided to leave his consulting job. So that was many years of really generous stipend and eating and just living it up then. My connection.
So you're going to notice the hairstyles. We've been kind of diving into the Enneagram. And so Way kind of in general looks the same because he's like a nine. He's a peacemaker. I go through a lot of things because I'm just trying new hairstyles. And then Harmon's a four, so he's trying to be special.
I'm special. I stand out. Acknowledge that, please.
Super, yeah. Super special.
Pirate patch and all. I don't know if you can see it because something's covering the pirate patch.
Yeah, he was a pirate.
I tore a cornea. Thank you to Ollie who helped me with that. That's really painful if anyone's gone through that. My connection, I actually had 1 year overlap with Mr. Way. He was a fifth year. I was a freshman coming in. That was our first connection. I met my wife, Jen, in college. Her connection with Rachel, they actually had the same degree. They're the same year. So they actually had some classes together. I don't know if, do we have a picture of us? Okay, after. So my connection with all this, I was kind of transitioning off from education school. I was still part of Austin Chinese Church, wrestling with pressures of just the Asian culture, the pressure of what am I going to do? Parents want a stable job. Always growing up, I grew up in a very, really conservative, fundamental background, but I had always done music of sorts. And so even at Austin Chinese Church, I was leading music on Sunday gatherings. Their English service is what you would say. And then on the side, Gid likes to recall that I helped their, it's called Awana. I don't even know of any context where you guys know Awana.
Raise your hand
some
if you know
do.
What Awana is. Yeah.
Wow.
Harmon was the Awana leader.
So I played like music for them too. And I think that kind of stood out. So it was from that kind of connection that I remember getting a call from Gideon when he, like, just a few months after he moved from Detroit. And then me still wrestling, you know, that tension of like, I'm rolling off school, college. What am I going to do? I've always loved doing music. I always played with, you know, my friends and cover bands, everything of that sort. I remember sitting down at Freebirds one day for lunch with Gideon and him just kind of connecting the dots with me of saying like, hey, we're going to start something here. Do you want to be a part of it? Maybe the vision of what good art could be, good music could be. The arrogance in me like, yeah, it's totally, I know good art. I know good music. I can do that. I already make good art and good music. You know, let me help you because I'm special. You know, so yeah. It was in that connection that it kind of started. And then there was a point where, you know, you always see me running around with kids, and I actually babysat a lot of their kids. I think there might be a little video.
There is. Yeah. There is.
So this is with me and little Noah.
Go. Go. Bring it! Bring it! Go! Oh! Almost. Oh, what are you doing, silly?
Move.
Can you throw it back at me? Throw the ball back at me. Ready? Throw. Yay. All right, now say, bring it. Bring it. Throw. Oh, you got Noah. Ready? Bring it.
Bring it.
Bring it. Oh, good catch, Noah. Ready, throw. Yay.
That's awesome. So, Noah Harmon literally changed your diapers. But no, so this was kind of around the time y'all were processing, also kind of being second generation Asian American, wanting to extend hospitality to friends at UT within and beyond the Asian American culture. And I think around that time, too, I think, Gid, I've heard you, and I'll just kind of mention this as we move into the next part, that a lot of times in that context, as you're growing up, there's this kind of ceiling you feel at some point where maybe you aren't allowed to fully express or something.
Yeah, I think if you come from a first-generation immigrant background, I think there's common stories where basic needs are a huge priority. And so how immigrant parents sometimes show love is just by caring for basic needs, even if you're an adult. Aziz Ansari has a story of how his parents showed up with $20 in their pockets. And Aziz is like, can you imagine if I showed up with $20 in Brooklyn? Be like, I'd get a smoothie and I'd be like, ah, there's my $20, right? And because those things are so important, as you transition to adults, sometimes their care can still feel like they interact with you like children. And so how that plays out if in an immigrant church, what's unspoken then are the second, third generation who grow up. They're still seen as kids. And so they'll throw money at them, which feels like they're loving them, but they're not really allowing them to grow and develop their own faith. And I think we were kind of in that context. And really wanting to grow into ourselves, I think.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And so at some point, it was good for us to jump out of the nest and start our descent into early childhood, which we wrestle with things like autonomy and shame. It's when we learn to use the potty all by ourselves. So this was kind of the time when y'all moved the college ministry offsite. I think we have a picture. We became liquid. We were so cute back then. We might have another picture. Yeah. So this is some of our early crew. There's Mr. Oaks. Can you recognize? Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. And we kind of, around that time too, with music, because we knew what art was, we started to sit up and crawl. We had a DJ, I think, if you can imagine. Smoke machines. So we might even have another photo. Yeah, there we go. Look at that. And so I think there was kind of this concert venue is somewhat of a reaction to the lack of artistry in a lot of Christian subculture. And so we were kind of basically reinventing a lot of things and trying a lot of new stuff. And so do you want to talk a little bit about some of the music experiments? I think there was a worship without words, maybe.
Yeah, so I think Jason touched on just the reaction of coming from our context and what faith would look like for us growing up. And then once we were able to kind of start and birth our own baby, in a sense, we thought, you know, a lot of energy, a lot of resources, attention had to be solely Sunday-based because we knew what it should be or what it should not be from our context. And so we put a lot of energy into what we viewed was good art, contextualized a lot of things and like what we heard around us. For instance, this Worship Without Words that Jason talked about is a service that was not spoken. It was all done through music and text. And so I remember pouring hours in the middle of the week, having volunteers, college students, you know, people, Gideon, his wife, Karen, and all.
I think Karen pulled an all-nighter with, she was like 7 months pregnant with Noah. I think.
Yeah. For this one service where, you know, if you guys have ever been to a Sigur Rós concert where they put up a scrim with beautiful visuals and display, which is great art. It's really impactful. And we were to, you know, kind of do a knockoff of something like that. Hours and hours. But afterwards, you know, it's done. Like, what's the point of it afterwards? Just examples of that.
No, that's good. So, yeah, so we were kind of just trying all kinds of new stuff. We're doing things all by ourselves because we were big boys and girls, which is kind of cute. So we were kind of bumbling around, you know, as toddlers do. We had goose eggs on our foreheads from hitting coffee tables. And we tried a bunch of experiments. We had some really beautiful things that lasted for short periods of time, like the 297 Collective. I think we had Shane Claiborne come at some point.
Yeah. So I think we had read a book around that time that was impactful in our community. But at that stage of development, you don't really know the difference between what someone is doing and who they are. And I, you know, I've met Shane a few times, and I think what he does is actually really beautiful. And I think it comes out of who he is and who their community is. But when you're kind of young and you're trying things, you don't know how to ask those questions. So you just see what they're doing and you go, oh, I'm going to do that too. So there's one particular weekend where he came and he spoke. And then at the end of it, he didn't tell us he was going to do this. But during the Eucharist, he was like, you know, if you feel led, you can donate your shoes. And so I think there's a picture. And so people came up. It was a pretty moving experience and all these people donated their shoes. And you leave that night. It's kind of euphoric because you're walking in your bare feet, but it's a lot of ego. You walk away and you're like, oh man, look what I just did. I think we're changing the world. And then I remember going back to the office on Tuesday and we've got several hundred pairs of shoes and we didn't know what to do. There weren't really instructions. We were supposed to call someone in San Antonio. And then, so I just remember like those experiences were formative in terms of just trying to figure out who we are, but we were just kind of copying things of what they were doing. So that's an example of something.
Around that time, kind of came into the Space 12 era.
Yeah, and I think along those lines of just trying things and feeling like we could actually accomplish something. You know, some of you have heard the story before, but we were looking for some space that we could use throughout the week. You know, at the time we were officing at 501 Studios, and it was really underutilized. It wasn't really impacting the neighborhood. Just the three of us were in there, you know, for a few hours a day. So Gid kind of biked past this building that we saw was for lease, and we're like, oh, that might fit in our budget. We took a look inside, and we definitely were affirmed. We're like, yes, we can afford this. But it used to be a nightclub. They had some special events Sunday nights. The three of us were thinking of revisiting that for a talent show tonight. I don't know about you guys. I've been working out. But we were thinking, you know, this could be a place to be a church. And we were like, you know, maybe we can kind of restore this. We can kind of reclaim this. And so we spent about 9 months trying to renovate this space. And it was all volunteer. It was all the Vox community. It was even neighbors. It was even organizations off campus. So it was beautiful seeing all these people just pouring in hours and energy, a lot of sweat, tears, and even blood. I think Oliver like stepped on a nail. Three people stepped on nails, and they had to get their tetanus shot. But it was just this idea that we were trying to create something and build something. And we had Sam come down. Sam was the missions pastor at the time when we first started this, and we were trying to think of ways we could use this space. And I think in our minds, a lot of it was, if we just build this, like, things will happen. If we just kind of create this space, then people will start showing up. We can change the neighborhood. We can change the city. And that first year, we usually call it the season of crickets, because literally nothing was happening here. It was just us hanging out. And we realized there was just a lot that we still had to learn. There were a lot of dynamics in this neighborhood that we had to sort of do more listening and do more learning in that process. And that was part of kind of us trying all these things, or thinking that we could actually do something on our own.
Yeah. Seemed like the crickets too. There were actually a lot of crickets.
There were actually literal crickets. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like they're always chirping all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But Sam gave a lot of leadership to that. And over time, we were able to connect and build relationships. Sam actually kind of coordinated the school coalition. There were 9 schools in AISD that were going to be shut down. I think 7 of them were in the east side. So he was really instrumental in kind of bringing the schools, members from those schools, to really be a voice. And that was kind of the beginning of our learning to actually begin building relationships and partnerships.
Yeah. And a lot of our existing partnerships, I think, developed through his relationships, like Inside Books, Allies, a couple others. Cool. So preschool. So we learned how to use the potty, and then we were ready to dress ourselves. So this is the time where you're wanting to take initiative, want to do a lot of stuff. I think we have a great picture of Gideon here. Yes. So no one,
neckbeard Gid.
So no one tried to stop you. Like, did anybody try to stop you?
No, this is the idea behind it. I was like, well, I've never had a beard. Never on my neck. Feels new. I'm going to try it. And then I was trying to grow my mustache long enough so I could wax it, but I never got around to buying wax. But to me, this is what burnout looks like. Like, you can't even see what you look like. And then everyone around you is like, yeah, keep going. This is great.
It's good. It's a good image.
It's a good artifact.
Burn that into your memory. Yeah. So, yeah, this is the season y'all were kind of saying yes to everything and everyone, kind of in a like a survival mode in a sense. Really weren't sure if you were going to make it. And, yeah, I think, you know, that burnout piece is something I've heard you talk about. Can you just say a little bit about kind of your experience, kind of leading into your sabbatical a bit?
Yeah. Yeah. So we were trying to do too many things because without a sense of who we are. And then we were just telling people to do more stuff without really supporting ourselves and each other. And then while that was happening, there was a guy that I'd met speaking up in Canada, and he was wanting to start a church. And he was like, hey, I want to come down. I'm going to learn from you guys, and then going to go back to start a church. Sold his home, moved down, and then within 3 months, we realized that it was a bad fit. And then there's a very specific memory. Jason says when you have trauma, the memories are very vivid. So it was 2 days before Christmas. This guy had moved down. We were about 3 months in. It was a warm December kind of afternoon. And I was hanging out in the front courtyard of my house. And my phone starts blowing up. And then this couple says, hey, I need to come talk to you. This is 2 days before Christmas. And that week earlier, I had just done a staff just review, just checking in with everyone. How's everyone doing? Everyone was doing great. This couple shows up and tells me that this person has been talking to a lot of people and that things are terrible and then that they're leaving. And I remember that moment of just not, like, I was so low on resources, not knowing what to do. I remember just getting on my bike and I just started riding. I didn't know where I was riding to. I remember 2 days later, I think it was either Christmas Eve or actual Christmas Day. My parents were staying with us and we were in the boys' room. So we had a mattress in my boys' room. And I was lying there for 2 hours on the phone with John Bagwell. And in that season, you know, community members like Bags and Ollie and Hannah and Gina and Sam really kept us together when things were pretty dire. So the embarrassing part of the story is that point isn't even the lowest part of the story. So all my mentors are like, this guy's got to go. Let him go. I'm an optimist. I'm an adventurer. So everyone was like, this isn't working. This guy's got to go. And I was like, no, we can do this. Let's rally. Let's do it in a different way. I let it go on for 3 more years until I almost burned myself into the ground and almost at the expense of the community. And so that to me kind of captures that season.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think way you kind of is that was kind of winding down, had a moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of out of that, you know, Gid was fortunate enough to take a sabbatical a few years back. And so he kind of left this community to me, which, you know, there's a lot of emotional weight to that. And so I'm thankful that that happened because I actually have a better understanding of what, you know, Gid experiences day to day. But, you know, there was a moment for me in that season too where I became very overwhelmed. You know, we call this the budget meeting. And out of sort of what happened with that difficult staff situation, there was a lot of kind of confrontation, a lot of emotions coming out of that. And, you know, budget meetings usually aren't very exciting. But this one was very exciting. A lot of fireworks going on. I remember, like, the same thing, just have a vivid memory. Myself, Jen, and John Bagwell were sitting up here kind of talking through it and just getting kind of hammered. It was like the firing squad. And there were just a lot of emotion, a lot of accusations. And for me, you know, being a 9 on the Enneagram, being a peacemaker, that's sort of what I prided myself on was, you know, one, I avoid conflict, but really my goal is to work through, like, kind of create space where there is no conflict. And so that piece was very difficult for me to sort of manage, even internally. And that was the first time I had a physiological response. Like, I had an actual panic attack, which I've never experienced. I hope I never will again. But there was such a physical reaction to that stress. And a lot of it was, for me, realizing that I've been trying to do a lot of what, like, I think I am as a peacemaker. But it was a lot of just doing versus actually doing the work to kind of do the inner work to see who I am and let that kind of lead. So for me, that was also a moment of just being overwhelmed, kind of being broken to the point where I realized this isn't something I can actually kind of carry on my own.
Yeah. So it was kind of a season where we were facing our mortality and kind of experience when we talk about ego and talk about kind of the death of the ego, like we have an intimate experience of that ego death, if you will, a little bit. And that was really hard because I think for a while we were kind of thinking we're going to change the world. Like, and we're gonna make this relevant somehow. And then, you know, we just kind of got crushed and mashed up a bit. Yeah. And realized, you know, maybe we're actually not that talented. and I think that's why we tell people we will disappoint you. Not because we're trying. We don't even have to try and we're going to do it. So, but if you'll hang in there, there is something even more beautiful on the other side of that disappointment. So, and I think this was around the time we were kind of You want to talk about music, or do you want to talk a little bit?
Yeah. So I think you can use the music at Vox kind of as a microcosm of where just our community in that sense in those years. Our community was still very transient at that time. But with that, you know, just with that vision that Gid had laid on me, that one lunch, maybe this was like even 5 years ago or so, of just wanting to produce something that was beautiful and transcendent. I didn't know what that meant was. I now have language to it, thankfully. But the arrogance of wanting to try to bring that out with a transient group of people, I think just personally, there was a lot of failure on my part as a leader and pastor of being gracious and appreciating what people are already bringing in, and just acknowledging what they can do and yet still wanting to bring something out. So being in transit community, people were always coming and going, and I could never find that stability of having people to kind of call a team or musicians around me to kind of bring out the vision of what I was hoping for musically. And so kind of like a microcosm of that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of around the time we're entering into our school age years where we're trying to do things. We were trying to do things to find our place. And coming kind of to the end of that, and so this is around the time we started to look for a connection with a larger, more mature community. Entity that was bigger and older. So we started to get to know the ECC, which is the larger group that we're connected with now. And this also is around the time that kind of ushered us into the ancient rhythms. So people wonder, what are, you know, all the different things we're doing? We realize we don't have to keep reinventing everything. There's some really beautiful ancient things. And I think this was also around the time that my family kind of came into the mix a little bit as well. And I think it was really interesting. I remember having about probably 8 to 10 conversations with Gideon, actually, where I would go and I would say, why is Vox safe? Or why is it so beautiful? Or, you know, I was just trying to figure out how it worked. And every time he'd just put his head down and say, yeah, we're just really bad at things. Like some version of this. And I'm like, what are you talking about, man? Like, we just had these conversations. And so in that, there was maybe some push to give some language to what's been beautiful. And I think this was kind of around the time we had... So the other piece with this, what you mentioned, Harmon, was there was just kind of this influx of people in Vox, a lot of people you connected with. And I think you were touching on just what that felt like to have these friendships that just kind of disappeared. And if it's okay, I'm going to kind of lead into that story again, where we did a sermon about a year ago. You want to share a little bit about that?
So I think we were coming off of a season that was pretty challenging, the, you know, 3 through 6. And we were beginning to heal, but we didn't really know what that looked like. And so when you start a church, people always tell you, the folks that start with you, when you find your voice and your legs, they're not going to be there anymore. And in your mind, you're just young and a little bit arrogant. So you're like, you know, but not us. And then as this is happening, you're just losing people that you're really close to. And it's one of the spheres in life where there's the lines are blurred of friendship, pastor, parishioner, employer, employee, friends, community. And then so what happens is you just keep losing friends. And there's no space to grieve. You just keep going. But at a certain point, those wounds catch up to you. And especially, you know, with our family and our wives, we're all doing this together. So I would tell this story again and again. I would just tell people because I was hurting, I think. And then Jason and I don't even remember, we were giving a sermon together and we had worked on it. And then while we were giving the sermon that day, halfway through, he goes, Gideon, I hope it's okay. We didn't plan this in the sermon, but I woke up in the middle of the night and I felt like I was supposed to say something. And do you remember what you said, Jason?
Yeah, I remember hearing your story, and I remember feeling like the pain behind it. And You know, I woke up and I was having a dream, but I was conscious of the dream, and I was apologizing to you and to Waylon and Harmon and your spouses and your children, just for all the people you had given so much to, invested in, who just kind of disappeared, and a lot of them didn't even say goodbye. And so I felt like it's like a connected maybe with the empathy of the Holy Spirit a little bit, maybe.
So, yeah. And so when you articulated that publicly, it was really healing, I know, for myself and for Karen, and I think for a lot of our families as well.
Mm. Yeah. So this was kind of the time we were slowing down, I think. It was kind of a moment to kind of look at how dramatic the fall had been. You know, we kind of shaken our head a little bit more and said, wow, this has had a cost, you know, and I think that was around the time. We also kind of started our covenant member process as well.
Yeah, and I think from all those experiences, you know, this idea of starting covenant membership had, you know, we're trying to contrast it to the idea of, you know, think of membership, you think in maybe terms of a contract. A lot of times it's for to protect yourself or whatever benefits you can receive for yourself. But the idea of covenant being that we exist for the benefit of the other, was really meaningful for us to really capture that idea as we were trying to give our community space to grow and to develop and to heal. And so we were intentional about the idea of having membership in discernment. You know, if someone comes to our community, really giving them space for a year to say, you're a member in discernment, for you, like you were saying, for you to be disappointed by us, but for us to actually get to know you, for you to get to know us. And it's really in that space, I think, that's given us a healthy avenue to really build community and build growth.
Yeah. And that was kind of around the time we were transitioning from novelty to what's timeless. So that's when the lectionary, where the scriptures we use are kind of given to us, the bells, the incense, passing the peace. And notice that these ancient rhythms actually host the mystery and they actually cultivate wisdom, which is related to our vision statement, which a lot of people may not know. And our vision is to be a true self community that reciprocates God's love and grace. I think up to this point, we really didn't know how to receive it. Like we were really in this place of surviving and felt like we just needed to kind of pour out. And so this kind of marks a time where we started to wonder what it would be like to receive. And I think some people ask like what wisdom is. I think it's a function of getting older, actually, because you just don't have as much energy. Like in the first half of your life, you just think you can do everything. So you just do everything. But at some point you're like, I don't have the energy to do everything. So I have to choose. And that's when discernment comes in. How do I choose what the best is, where God is? And how do I not, you know, just kind of do all this compulsive stuff that's related to self-protection? And then this brings us kind of to where we are today, which is kind of moving into junior high, high school. The ages don't completely line up, but this is kind of the identity place where we're at now. We're on this kind of precipice. And it's kind of ironic because a lot of communities start off trying to figure out their identity and then live into it. But the developmental psychologist says, you've got to just do a bunch of stuff. You need to go out and fail a whole bunch. We got that down. Just do this, and out of this like ocean of activity, you look out and you notice these kind of resonant patterns of how God's grace emerged. And so that's kind of when we started developing our values, which we're talking about now.
Yeah, and you know, our navigation team, the leadership team that we have here, we spent a season just reflecting on, you know, what captures what we hope to be as a community, and maybe even what we already are in some ways. And so we, as an exercise, we each kind of listed our own values, what we felt captured Vox. And when we came together, there was a lot of overlap. And from that overlap, we came up with this list of six values. The first is artistry, which, you know, we're all called to be creators, to be collaborators, both with God and with others. Peculiarity, the idea that we're different. Kind of this idea of what holiness really is, but it's been kind of hijacked. But we're different. We're supposed to live in a different way, in a way of grace. And then you have empathy, just our ability to listen and understand the story of the other. Participation, that in the context of community, we all brings something, and we all contribute to what this community becomes. And then posture, it's, you know, not necessarily what we achieve or what we do, but it's really the, we feel like posture is really more valuable, the posture of humility in how we approach what we do and conversations we have. And then the final one is mystery, where, you know, it's kind of simplistic to pursue certainty as our end goal, but there's a lot of mystery in our understanding of who God is, what the scriptures say, and just really holding that posture of humility and mystery in that. So for the next 6 weeks, starting next week, Gid, myself, Jason, Jenna, and Liz, we're going to be preaching on each of these values and just kind of seeing how that fits and how that, what that looks like for our community to live those out.
Awesome. And so this kind of brings us back to our passage that we started with. I'm going to let you just read that quietly for a minute. So it's interesting what emerges as we journey are those three. You notice what's missing from the list? Knowledge, truth. I think they're embedded in those ideas. But there's ways in which we can care about the truth and knowledge and scripture that allows our ego to thrive, our false self. And we can actually even develop a religious ego. And if you spend any time in church, you've encountered, maybe unfortunately embodied, the religious ego at some point. But our passage calls us to a knowledge that's love-centric and an engagement with truth that's inherently vulnerable. How vulnerable do you feel when you're right? Not very, right? Then that's a very small truth that we've come to. And this is why we actually don't have a bullet point list of our stances and responses to all of the hot button kind of questions or issues. This is intentional because it forces us to have a conversation with each other, with scripture and with Jesus. So our false self in that vulnerable space can hopefully calm down and die back just a little bit. And I think it's kind of hard for us to understand that. And we get that question a lot with people who are newer to Vox because we're products of a consumption-based spirituality. So on some level, we want to pick up the box and we want to look at the side of it and read the ingredients and say, yeah, and decide whether or not we want to take it in. And I think sometimes we might just be looking for a way around the awkwardness and the painfulness of just trying to find our place and fit in. Like it feels like junior high. And I think we say this also a lot, that belonging probably for a lot of us feels like the little gosling falling from the cliff. And maybe there isn't a way around those steps. I'm really sorry. And maybe the best we can do is flail as we descend into God's love, like a little gosling. I know I need to let go of that. But Gid, you actually have a more recent story around how love is vulnerability has shown up.
Yeah. So we have a NAV retreat, which is our leadership team. And a couple of weeks ago we were meeting and the first question we asked, and we kind of grouped into groups of fours and fives, and we said, how have you changed as a leader, from this year to last? And part of what I shared, was really because of the space that the rest of the team members created. But what I shared was, I think I'm learning to lead less from fear. I think for 10 years, I didn't even name the anxiety, but there was this low-level anxiety that was really driving me to be impressive. I needed to impress. I needed to lead from the front. I need to beat the drum. I need to have this vision. This is where we're going. And I'm trying to learn to lead from who I am, from a place of being known and loved, which in many ways is harder. And in the group, everyone just started talking about, you know, their vulnerabilities as someone who's coming to this team. And I just felt so honored to be a part of a community that is willing to lead with our vulnerabilities, that somehow we actually trust the gospel, that in our weakness, in our weakness, that's where strength begins. And so it kind of made me think through, you know, 10 years ago, we were trying to think of a name for a church, and we were just trying to think of a cute name, probably. And we came up with Vox Venier, which means voice of grace. I think in our minds, we thought, oh, we've got grace. and we're going to go around to this world. We're going to change. We're going to fix the church. We probably like fixed half a thing and started 10 more problems. But I think our idea was we're going to give grace to all these people. And then in those hard years from years 3 to 6, only in hindsight can I give language to this, that you never choose grace. And grace will come get you at some point. And it kind of, the beginning of it feels like death, but it's rescuing us out of who we think we need to be into who we actually are. And so, you know, I think that that name actually is really profound and we're growing into it. And somehow we've been invited. And the voice of grace is we're learning to receive that. And so.
Thank you. So we want to close with a prayer. Harmon's going to lead us through. But in our meeting this week, there was the fun roast kind of part of it in the pictures. But it was also kind of clear that one of the reasons we came to liturgy, which means the work of the people, is because it's been the people. Who we are today is not, it isn't, I've been on the part of a lot of churches that are super personality driven. And sure, personality is always going to affect it. But it took us 2 months to figure out who are the pastors here. Like, so there's this sense that that this next stretch of who we're going to be, you get to help us kind of shape that, and it's kind of going to be through that process of how we grow up and how we'll be graced. We'll be because of who you are and what you bring to the table, but also God's patient love. So, Harmon, would you go and lead us in kind of a responsive prayer that kind of reflects this desire for us to grow well into the bit of what we've already noticed?
Everyone, please pray with me. There will be a response in yellow. God, who is the essence of love, you see all of our successes and failures, our trauma and our healing. You understand and love the entirety of us. Awaken us with your love and sustain us in your mercy. As we try to earn love that we already have, exhaust what we do out of sacrifice so that we can grow to live out of love itself. And as we move into this next season, may the voices of condemnation that keep us awake soften. May we see ourselves with your eyes of kindness, to discover the nearness of grace that is always accessible and ever present. May Christ in us form us together with grace and patience as his loving hands and feet in our world. May we live as the church in the tender name of the Father and the relentless love of the Son and the compassionate presence of the Holy Spirit. Amen.